Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is overwhelmed by the passage of time. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Oh, you're equal with last week's audience. I'd say slightly, almost exactly the same, slightly worse. But thank you for coming back. I mean, thank you for coming back this week. Welcome to Richard. So we only do one a week. We've got to keep it up. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to William Ringpiece Thackeray. He wrote the terrible book Vanity Fair. Oh, Vanitatis Vanitatum. I studied it for A-level. And also Collie Kibber, the pompous poet laureate of the time. And Henry Fielding, who wrote Tom Jones. And Henry Fielding calls it Rahalastapa. Because he's the only cool one of those 18th century authors. Am I right? And poets. There's a statue of Collie Kibber in Soho Square. Go and have a look. He's a cunt. My favourite thing about Henry Fielding. It's gone very highbrow, hasn't it? It's gone very highbrow this week, hasn't it? Favourite thing about Henry Fielding is that he keeps on going about Collie Kibber and how rubbish she is and parodying Collie Kibber. And that's the only reason I know who Collie Kibber is, because of Henry Fielding. And that fills me with delight. I'm hoping that in 200 years' time, that's how people will only know about Stuart Lee through my work. He's in the theatre at the same time as me. He's left. I don't think he's drawn it himself, but there's a gigantic piece of fan art above the mirror of his stupid face looking down next to his links. He wears links. Likes the links, gets the links. Where's links? I put some on last week. I mean, 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago. And it was terrible. I went back to Shepherd's Bush for the first time in 5 years. I used to live in Shepherd's Bush and I moved out. And I went back this week for the first time, like walking the streets of Shepherd's Bush. And it's only 5 years, but it's changed a lot. That's why I'm feeling overwhelmed by the passage of time. The House of Fraser's closing down. Everything's 20% off. It looks like a charity shop. It used to be the a classy shop in the Westfield. The Apple store's gone. What's gone? Didn't know things were going so badly for Apple. They're closing. Having a bad time. They've closed down. Albertine's has closed down, the wine bar I used to go to. Yeah. There's a temp in bowling, though. So, you know, it swings around, and that made me want to move back to Shepherd's Bush. Otherwise, I'm not really missing Shepherd's Bush. But it was nice to go back and see it. Look, we'll crack on. We've got a fantastic guest for you this week. He's probably, although I'm pretty sure this is not one of his real credits, but it's on his IMDb page, and that's good enough for me. He's probably best known for being the production assistant on Pete Small is Dead, a movie starring Peter Dinklage and Steve Buscemi. It just seems unlikely that that's him. Will you please welcome the incredible Chris McCausland, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. Great. Here we go. Hello. Come on down. Sit.
Hello.
Come on down. Sit down. Is that you, Chris McCausland, from the Pete Smalls is Dead?
It's not, mate. No. Oh. I mean, there can't be too many Chris McCauslands, but I know there's a rally driver. That's not me either. That'd be a fucking disaster, wouldn't it? Had a career of 3 days, the Chris McCausland, the rally driver. There's an accountant as well.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a production assistant on I've never even heard of it, mate. What was it called?
He's on your IMDb page as you. So sometimes they have, like, Chris McCausland's 1, 2, and 3 on there, but he's one of his credits has got it onto your page.
I can. Do you know what? I honestly didn't know I had an IMDb page. So.
Well, that's what I live by. That's basically my research. So we're going to be talking through your IMDb page as we go. What I nearly chose, but I think this might be one of your main credits is you played Rudy the street trader in the somewhat unfortunately named Me Too.
Oh yeah, it's in retrospect the worst named children's TV show that there's ever been, really, isn't it? It does mean that whenever you Google my name now, one of the suggested search entries is Chris McCausland Me Too, which. Which people must Google me and go, what's he done? Dirty tick grabber. I can't even my daughter's old enough now to have an interest in what I do, but I can't even tell her to like look it up, can I, in case something horrific comes up?
Was it made by the same people as Balamori? There's a very Balamori feel to that show.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was the far more unsuccessful sequel. it was basically just saying things over enthusiastically in silly clothing, wasn't it? And I remember when they asked me to do it, because I'd only been doing stand-up a few years by that point, and yeah. And I thought, oh, God, I can't do that. That's embarrassing. I'm not doing that. But I thought, well, just go up, find out everything, and then say no. And I went up, and he just got me arsing around for the day, and I said, you want to pay me to do this? And he went, yeah. I said, it's just arsing around, isn't it? I'll do that. So I went up to do it. Day one, they had me in a frock with a lampshade on my head. I was, oh, God, I've made a grave error. But I think what it did, Rich, is it massively increased my threshold for embarrassment, and which is quite a good thing when you're a stand-up comedian.
It is. Well, you know, Miles Jupp, I always used to take the mickey out of him being in Balamori, and I think the acting in Me Too is actually much better than Balamori.
Yeah, I think we really found the inner drama of the characters.
I think you did.
You know. There was a lovely episode about going to Switzerland to end your life early, which I think really captured the heart of the 3-year-olds.
So, Chris,
I was trying to remember what it's called. It's something serious. I couldn't think of the words.
look, you are, you know, obviously, I'm surprised. In some ways, how long you've been a stand-up comedian, but just time passes so quickly.
Yeah.
You started being a stand-up comedian in 2003, having What drew you in? I mean, that's a lot. You've sort of risen to prominence in the last couple of years as a stand-up. I think you're on TV a lot now, but it's you've put the time in as a stand-up.
Yeah, like, and it's pretty much all I've done. So it's like I did a lot of gigs. Like in terms of the circuit, I've never stopped apart from the lockdowns, really. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And a lot, like, I was always working. So I think, I think it's really done me good, like, in that I'm doing shows and I feel like I've got a lot of, I've played a lot of different rooms, you know, yeah. And you feel like you've got a lot of strings to your bow in terms of playing any situation, really, that comes up. They're all transferable skills, aren't they, you know?
They are, and it's interesting because it doesn't happen... I guess there's a lot of people who gig in clubs for their whole lives and for several decades, but it's kind of rarer now. In the old days, people would work for 20 years and then get TV, and now it's quite rare someone to work for 20 years and then get TV. You know, suddenly get lots of TV work. I mean, you know, you've done TV over those times, but it's sort of really hit a broken patch now. But it is much better as a result of, you know, you absolutely you know what you're doing as a stand-up.
Yeah, you've just got a lot more confidence and comfort in yourself. So, like, I think if I'd have got a lot of TV 10 years ago, a lot of these same shows, I don't think I'd have been as good, not even because of the skills, but just because of me level of comfort in myself. I think I would have tried to be... like, play the character of like a cooler comedian, do you know, and like be the kind of the deadpan cool guy on the telly. I think I would have tried to force a persona, whereas now I'm just fucking happy to be there. Like, you know, like 10 years ago I would have tried to just keep a straight face and just say me punchline, whereas now I've just got this big stupid dumb grin on my face and I'm laughing at everyone's jokes, and I think if you look like you're having a good time,
yeah,
It all kind of, you know, works better, doesn't it?
Yeah. What drew you? Because you worked in IT, really, was it before you were a comedian?
Yeah, so my degree's in software engineering.
Yeah.
And I've got zero performance skills to my name up until trying stand-up. Before stand-up, my CV was basically just school nativity. I was an angel once and I got a nosebleed and I had to be airlifted out of the whatever you call it. What's that little thing? The parade of fucking angels. It was, honestly, I just got this nosebleed and I panicked and shook my head and it sprayed everywhere. It looked like there'd been a drive-by shooting of the angels. And I remember once as well, I had one school play. I remember my only job was to smash two cymbals together. And I was so bored, I was twiddling one of the cymbals around on the strap until it couldn't go any further and then spinning it back the other way like that. And then when it finally came to my bit, I'd weakened the connection. So I flung my arms apart and this cymbal just went flying across the room. So I didn't have a massive amount of success on stage. Degree in software engineering, A-levels in maths and further maths and computers. And I'm a geek deep down, but I stopped doing the computers because of my eyesight. So it all became, you know, I mean, I was a website designer and the websites were just fucking ugly. So I hated being slower than the person next to me. You know, you can always do things. Like if you've got something that hinders you in ways, there's always ways of doing things. But I hate being like worse or slower than somebody else because of it. I'd rather find something else to do. So
yeah,
I was working in a call center doing business sales for like care home risk assessment software and. Oh, riveting it was. And that's when I started stand-up, mate. It was just a little bucket list thing to have a go. And I think driven on by the monotony of the call centre and just my lack of fulfilment in my job, really.
Yeah.
It became a hobby.
Yeah.
Like an escape, really, you know.
Yeah. So how quickly did it become your job?
2 years.
Yeah, so maybe pretty quick.
I mean, I just hammered it for 2 years because I did one gig in like the July and then one in August and one in September. And then after that, I just kind of, it became like, a bit of an escape from the monotony of the job, and you meet interesting people. It wasn't really I'm going to be a comedian. It was just something I really liked doing. And then somebody gave me a fiver and then a tenner. And you get to the point, don't you, where you can't give up the job until you've got enough money coming in, but you can't get enough money coming in until you've given up the job. So you have to get yourself to kind of a reasonable jumping off point and just hope for the best. But I did that within 2 years, really.
Terrific, yeah. And early on, I read that you sort of, you know, you addressed that you were blind, but then sort of left it behind.
Yeah, I didn't talk about it because I think me idea was that I wanted to. Basically, I was a big comedy fan, so I didn't get into stand up because I thought I've got something I can milk. But also, I knew that if I was sat in the audience and I came on stage, I'd think, oh, fucking hell. It's going to be like 20 minutes of blind jokes, isn't it? And so the aim was to just flip that on its head and not mention it. And so I'd do a joke at the beginning because I'd have to. And then I'd just move on and do other stuff. And so it was all about challenging preconceptions, really. And I think that is still true, but I do think also that, like, now I'm 45 and I look back, I think I just didn't have anything original to say, really. Like, I didn't, it would have been crass jokes that were just, you know, I didn't see it. And and also, I don't think I was massively comfortable with myself in terms of losing my sight, and maybe I just wasn't comfortable in my own skin. So, like, I'm 45 now and you kind of you kind of grow into your own skin. Like, I haven't been able to see for over 20 years now, and I think becoming a dad kind of changes your priorities as well, and you don't really have that weight of needing to be the cool 20 odd year old, and so all of that maybe was going on as well. But like at the time, it was just me trying to challenge the preconceptions and
well, that's understandable, and it sort of makes sense. But then again, it's such a unique, well, not unique, but from in a stand-up terms, it's an unusual perspective, and that's the great thing about stand-up, is you can work your way through that subjects like this and things that have happened to you like this for yourself and for the audience as well. So, you know, it's good that you've talked about it more now.
Maybe. Yeah, and I think I've just got more, as I say, more original things to say on it, more life experiences. And the good thing is that they are often things that everyone can relate to, but just with a bit of a twist on it. So you don't feel like it's not really like you're taking people out of their world massively. You're just making them see their own world from a slightly different perspective, really. Yeah. And that works for me. But still, like, you know, the tour show at the minute is probably the most I've talked about it. But apart from a few little references, it's that the show's about an hour and a half, and it's the last half an hour really that I kind of get into it a bit more. The tour show at the minute is, you know, I'm a stand up fan. I like you know, just traditional subjects of stand up as well. I like obscure stuff. I like surreal stuff. But I also just like talking about life, and the reason we all enjoy it is because we can all relate to the relatable. And so, whereas I will talk about in the show, you know, some of the stuff with regard to mine and my wife's relationship and the conflicts of her being from Brazil and me being from Liverpool, and the difficult, you know, how difficult my daughter was and all of that kind of traditional stuff, the last half an hour really flips her on the head, and I kind of talk about, hopefully a lot more honestly about, you know, my own shortcomings as both a dad and a husband, in that, you know, there's shit tons that I can't do, or, sure, you know, that I was terrified of getting into being a dad, because as I said, I only want to do things that I can do well. And if I don't think I can do something properly, I tend to find something else to do. But you can't really sidestep that, really, if you end up having a kid. You've kind of just got to do the best you can do at all the things that still need doing, irrelevant of whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You know, but it's really, I mean, yeah. I think you are such a good stand-up, and, like, as you say, a lot of your stuff is about things that are absolutely relatable, that happen to everyone, family relationships and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But it also, just, you know, I think, like, even things like, you talking about audio descriptions in porn. It's something that yeah. you would, you know, I wasn't even, I had to look it, I did look it up. So I did go to Pornhub and see if you were telling the truth, because you do a very funny routine about it.
Yeah.
But you know, it's something that wouldn't even cross your mind unless...
Astonishing, isn't it? Like,
it is.
I did it on live at the Apollo. I didn't expect it to make the edit, to be honest, but it was kind of like, she has an expression on her face that says she wishes she'd have tried harder at school. He has an expression on his face that says he's glad he didn't try harder at school. But yeah, it's an odd thing, isn't it? You know, porn is very, 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 very visual.
Yes.
And as funny as it is to think that somebody's gone to the trouble of making it accessible, I'm not really sure you're getting the full out of it, you know?
I sort of feel like that someone talking over it might cover up anything that you might have got out of it, because the sound of the sex might be enough to give you something, but someone talking over and describing it was all like, shut up, mate, I'm trying to listen in at this. You're ruining it. But, you know, but that's what I mean. So having that perspective that, you know, it's what comedy is about, isn't it? It's about finding your... It's about connecting with an audience, but also from your own perspective.
Yeah.
And so having that range of experience that most people wouldn't have...
It is, but it's also about not going on about it.
No,
and leaving people wanting to know more and leaving them wanting to be... Like, leaving them interested but wanting to know more rather than going on about it until it just becomes predictable or tiring, I think. I still feel like that, but I do. But I think I've just got a lot more original shit to say these days, so it's more... You know,
yeah,
more comfortable in my skin as well, mate.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's good to have that. I know what it's like, Chris, because I have aphantasia, so it's very, which is so I have a serious.
Isn't that a
condition.
Disney film?
So I can't. I'm blind inside. I can see, but I can't see inside my head. So, you know, it's the same, isn't it?
Yeah. You can't see inside your head.
I've got no my. I can't. If you can you if you can do you have, do you have mental images? I don't have no mental images, so I can't.
You can't imagine something.
If I close my eyes, I can only see blackness, and I can imagine things, but not. I can't see them.
Wow. Whereas I can imagine things, but I can't see outside my head.
Yeah, that's right.
Together, we should team up, mate. Yes. Together, we make a whole person with three balls.
Three balls. I didn't realize until lockdown that I didn't. I thought I always assumed I could see stuff inside my head, but I can't.
So what do you mean you always assumed?
Well, I just assumed that the way I imagine is the way that everyone imagines, and I can't. If you'd ask me,
but how do you imagine then?
I close my eyes and I think of stuff, and I.
But that's what imagining is.
I know, but I can't see it. But I can't see it. Some people, I mean, I didn't know that you could actually, you know, have a cinema going on in your head. So if you've got a cinema going on in your head, because you could...
So what do you see? Just like a spreadsheet entry?
I see blackness, and then occasionally I get like a little flash or something, but it's like it's behind my eyesight in my brain. So
wow.
It's like, it's sort of like a shadow, you know, a flicker of a shadow. I might see something. I've been trying to train myself to see... And I don't know if you've tried this. It might be.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just suggesting. I don't know if you've thought about just trying to see.
I do this thing where I just I rub myself on the back of the head for 5 minutes every day.
So you know, I think you and I are very similar, and we've been through much the same stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because I didn't realise I had the disability.
Do you get like a parking badge for that, mate?
I should do. But like you, I wouldn't, you know, I don't milk it. That's I wouldn't milk a physical disability. But do buy my book, Can I Have My Ball Back? And listen to my sitcom, Relativity. And there's a podcast coming out as well. Oh, dear.
I've never even heard of it. I fancy.
Imagine if I told you that and you realised, you know, you were double blind. That could have ruined your night, couldn't it? So at least
you say it. I imagine the little buckets and the mops and the dancing things off the film, but you can't even do that, can you?
I can't. And it's a very serious thing, and I would prefer it if you wouldn't make light of it.
Do
So, look, well, this is this, and I know you've told this story a few times, but when you were looking for work, you almost became a spy. Is this before you were a stand-up comedian?
Yeah, yeah.
So you got quite far into becoming a spy.
I did, mate. I got down to the last 30 out of 3,000 potential spies. I was in the top 1% of spies that this country has to offer. which you're waiting for the punchline is genuinely true. So I was unemployed for a while before I worked in the call center. Like, I didn't want to do the programming anymore, and was applying for things and wasn't getting the jobs I was applying for. It was basically started applying for mad shit, and you can apply to work for MI5 through like a you go to the building, there's no sign saying MI5 on the building, and like they don't even like say welcome to MI5 when you go in. It's a secret. They don't really want anyone knowing what it is. However, if you just apply for the graduate scheme, they send you a map with an arrow on it. So I applied through that and went through all the different psychometric, and then the interviews and a full day assessment where I had to sift through all of the information that they provided. There was all different threats, and I had to identify the most immediate threat and have a meeting with the surveillance team to get this guy surveilled. It was quite a long thing. I got down to 30 out of 3,000, and then I remember getting the letter which said that I haven't got the job. And they said it was because of my eyesight. And they said it was, I remember the word, in my inability to sift through vast amounts of information and identify a threat in a very limited period of time, right? Basically, the bomb would have gone off, right? While I was like halfway through my inbox. And I remember the person who was helping me like apply for stuff at the time, like from a charity, who was like helping me fill forms out and shit. She goes, that's discrimination. There's the Disability Discrimination Act. They can't not give you that job because I said that I don't want to live in a country that would give me that job. I'm glad that sometimes we need discrimination. Coming out on bloody than you. Oh, the Waterloo's blowing up. Sorry, but the guy we had working on this is blind. It takes him a little bit longer than everybody else. So I think sometimes a little bit of discrimination is necessary for the safety of the nation. But yeah, very
doesn't say
almost
much for them that you got that far before they realised you were blind, though, Chris. That's they're not very good at spying themselves, are they? They didn't even spot.
But you know what? There was one. I remember one interview where the guy goes, the guy. I mean, I signed the Official Secrets Act for this, but like, but if you don't hear from me again. I remember being in the interview, and he said he talked about my disability, and he goes, part of the job is running agents, like, because I thought an agent was like your spy, and it's not. The agent is the public or the people with the information, and as an employee, as a spy, you have to manage these people, these agents. And he goes, part of the job is running these agents and meeting up with them in staked out locations, secure locations, to trade or obtain information. And your disability strikes me as being a bit of a security risk. And like, because I just applied just for the sake of it. I didn't really have any ambition for the thing. I was applying. I just said, what's more undercover than a blind bloke meeting his mate in the pub for a pint, right? And he just went, yeah, good point. And then he scribbled something on his phone. And I've always wondered whether he just wrote, more blind people. Yeah, good point.
What they need is people pretending to be blind people.
Yeah.
Because then the foreign agents will go, oh, it doesn't matter. None of those people in here can see. So yeah. we can show the plans to each other.
Yeah.
And then, so you would have to teach people how to appear to be blind. I
absolutely.
Think.
White stick with a poison tip.
But of course, if you had become a spy, you would say you hadn't become a spy.
And, well, and I would tell you all that I've been a comedian for 20 years, yeah. Rich. And,
it would be the perfect cover.
Yeah. So I think it's I'm just undercover to try and catch Jimmy Carr hiding some of his income. That's what I'm, it's been quite a long project.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Look, but you've been doing so much stuff. I think people might have seen you recently doing a very funny bit with Lee Mack at the BAFTAs, which was terrific, with the autocue.
Yeah.
Was a fantastic bit.
Went well, didn't it?
It did go very well.
Shit in me pants, I was. It was, because when you do the BAFTAs and you present something, they put you together. And like I know Lee from, like, would I lie to you, a few times we've worked together, we get on well, and he lives quite close to me, so we were like, well, let's get together, and rather than just turning up and winging it, let's try and write something that's funny. So we came up with this idea where, like, he'd be reading my bits off the autocue to me, but then we get all confused. But it's on YouTube if you didn't see it. But like, the more we kind of wrote this together, we were really happy that it was quite old school. It was kind of too Ronnie's-esque in a way, like real kind of double act stuff.
Yeah.
But like, we'd never tried it in front of anyone. And it was so kind of intricately scripted that if it didn't work, we were going to die on our arse in front of the entire TV industry on live TV.
Yeah.
And I remember stood in the wings waiting to go on with him. And I said, Lee, do you want to just announce the nominations and we can fuck off? And he goes, don't chicken out on me now, Chris. But honestly, as soon as we got that first laugh, and I was like, I wasn't even expecting a laughter. This is going to be fine. And you just settle into the timing. And you know what? Because it was in my head. I didn't want to be the person that made Lee Mack not funny.
Yeah, he'd have turned on. If it started going wrong, he'd have turned on you in a second. That's the kind of guy he is. He'd have got out of it, but he'd have left you standing.
Yeah. But it went very well.
It did. And
he's such a generous guy comedically, you know, in terms of, like, he's got a lot more of a TV career than I have, and a lot more of a reputation, you know. But he's not only is he up for just getting stuck in and trying something a bit risky, but he's also very generous in sharing the laughs, and not necessarily, oh, that line needs to be mine, or do you know what I mean? He just wanted the whole thing to be funny for both of us, really.
I suppose that's interesting, because stand-ups often, you know, become quite self-reliant, and obviously they're used to getting their laughs on their own. But I think once you move into that, when you're working with other people, you have to understand that, you know, if you get a laugh, you're all getting the laugh.
It doesn't
matter who says the line. So it's not about you getting the laugh anymore. But some stand-ups find that more difficult than others, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And it's certainly, you know, if you watch it back as well, I think he commented to me afterwards that it's not often he plays the straight guy in the double act in the way, because he was feeding a lot of the lines in, if you know what I mean. But I was so fucking relieved, mate, when I came off stage. I think I was more happy than the person who we gave the award to.
But it's interesting because, you know, it is you do take a chance, but a lot of times on award shows, it either fails or someone misjudges the mood. It's very rare people get, you know, you remember the people who do it really, really well. And so actually, if you can make that moment shine, it is better, because I think that'll have done, you know, I think that'll have done you a lot of good in terms of extra other work and people knowing who you are and everything. So just, it's weird that a little sketch like that can sort of change.
Yeah, I think so, because you're literally doing it in front of everybody that makes TV shows, really. So, all good. I mean, I'm still waiting for the calls, but I'm sure.
I don't know. It's a bit, see, look at your IMDb page. It's interesting because you've done some acting in your time. You've done little bits of telly. You know, you've been in EastEnders, and you've done some.
I did
some
one
nice
day,
acting.
Mate. I wouldn't. Yeah, I did.
But, well, you've done some good, nice jobs. But if you look at it, there's so much from 2020, what, 20 and 21,
yeah,
so 22. Like, so everything's happened the last two or three years for you in TV terms.
So I was told, really, that to do the panel shows, you need to do Mock of the Week and you need to do 8 out of 10 Cats. And neither of them really would have me. And I did Live at the Apollo in 2017 or 18. And that really couldn't have gone better, but it still couldn't get either of those two panel shows on the back of it. And then I ended up getting Would I Lie to You was the first one, the first panel show I did. So kind of went straight in at the other end, really. And that was such a lovely experience and such an amazing thing to do pre COVID, really, in the panel shows since COVID have been a massively different experience. But to do that with a full studio audience, and then because that's Zeppotron, then I got Cats Does Countdown.
Yeah.
And Have I Got News for You as well came on the back of doing that Would I Lie to You. So that was only three things probably in the nearly 2.5 years since doing that Live at the Apollo. And then it just snowballed because I did well on Cats Countdown, and because I did well on Have I Got News for You, really. Then they start coming back in, and all the others start coming in then. But it was, I mean, I'm so competitive with the things. I over-prepare for everything, which kind of works. I mean, I think you can over-prepare for things that have got no prep in them as well, in terms of... panel shows, even if they say there's no prep, you can watch the episodes and get yourself in the frame of mind. When I did Cats Countdown, I knew it'd be really funny me not being able to play Countdown, but I thought, what would be funnier if I was fucking amazing? So I literally, like, my wife actually was close to divorcing me because I watched like 80 episodes of proper Countdown. And she was, the bloody theme tune was driving her mad, and I came up with ways of keeping the letters in my head and building the words in my head and keeping the numbers in my head, and then went on and battered everybody. and got the conundrum, which really surprised, because I couldn't practice the conundrum, but I managed to get the conundrum as well, and nearly had a panic attack. I lost control of my arms. John had to do the buzzer for me because my arms just went all over the place.
See, I wouldn't be able to do it because I can't visualize things in my head, so I'd need it.
If only it was written in front of you, Rich.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
If only there was some visual mechanism for playing the game.
I forgot I could see. I was so into character, I forgot I could actually see. But doing it, I've never done Would I Lie to You, so I don't know how that works, and I don't know how much prep you get. I don't know. And I've never asked anyone, actually. But that's quite a full-on one to be your first.
It is, yeah.
Because I think it's the, you know, it's the best one, I think, of the panel show, of the sit down behind a desk panel shows, I think.
Yeah, and weirdly, when that first one, the clip, my story that I did on it ended up being it went mental online. But you do an interview with the researcher, and they take you through all your past and your stories and, you know, holidays and they just want to know kind of true stories from you. And then we finished, and then the researcher was leaving, and my wife came in, and they were going, and she said, "Did you tell them about the neighbour downstairs?" And I said, "No, it's not funny, is it?" and so I told the researcher about this fella who moved in downstairs, who was deaf, and basically I didn't know he was deaf. And he didn't know I was blind. And we both thought each other was being rude. and genuinely, like, I was saying hello to him and he was just fucking ignoring me. But I didn't know that he'd been smiling and waving at me and I was blanking him. And I was 100% what happened. And I was like, I remember saying to my wife, "Have you seen that fella downstairs yet?" And she's going, "No." He's like, "Such a rude bastard. I've said hello to him 3 times now." Anyway, so we did that story on there, but that came from literally me, like, just something I didn't even think was funny in the moment. And they're going, "Have you said about the neighbour downstairs?" And they loved that. Like, yeah. But what I like to you, you can prepare from the point of view that you know the true stories that you've told them, because they're true. And so you can always kind of formulate a few little lines to throw in here and there if that story comes up, because you don't know what story's going to come up. But you can always kind of do a bit of prep that way. If it's a lie, you've got no idea until you turn it over what's coming up. But you can, you know, and as I say, watch the episodes, watch a lot of them, because it gets you in the frame of mind for pacing the story out and dropping the little the nuggets at points that leave them asking questions. I don't think you can really do too much of getting yourself in that frame of mind for a TV show, in that so that you're playing it, in that you can see what works and what doesn't, you know, and play it in the way that you think will work better, even in a show that doesn't have any prep. Like, have I got news for you? You'll usually know, oh, that's going to be the main story this week because Boris has been a cunt or something. And you kind of know that's going to... But you don't know that, like, they're going to ask you, oh, and what did he say on Saturday, or what was his thing with his suit or whatever. You don't know the little things, but you can read all the papers that week and you can write little gags or comments for stories just so that they're in your head if something does come up. And... So yeah, I massively overprepare for it.
Yeah, but it's worked, you know. It's because there you go. In those two or three appearances, some things been picked out of all of them, and then that, you know, and therefore you get offered more. So it's really interesting to see it when it happens to someone that it's, you know, and it's that weird thing with you that you know. I remember we did a double-headed, didn't we, with of Edinburgh shows. That was
Bristol,
yeah, which my mum and dad came, and they still talk about you and how good that show was. They never mentioned my show, but they loved you. It must have been a while ago, because
they left in the interval, Rich.
They saw you, thought, let's just say he's our son. He was so good. So, you know, anyone on the circuit knows you've been going for a long time, but it's great to see that it can pay off. And it's, you know, it's sort of fascinating, isn't it, that once you've got that, it snowballs, and then sometimes the snowball melts away, and that's it. You never know what's going to come next.
I mean, it is the thing with the TV, with the doing the TV shows that are like the panel things and all that, is that you are basically, you are living on other people's, nothing's in your control apart from doing well.
Yeah.
But I mean, they could decide at any point you've done it enough, or we've had you enough, or you didn't do well on one of them, or he's lost it. And you feel like you're kind of, you're on a ride, really, and it could be taken away from you at any point. So all you can keep on doing is preparing and enjoying yourself and not taking it for granted. But it's amazing the difference that it makes for people coming to see you live. You add up all of the shows that you've done in front of clubs, and, you know, I mean, how many shows have I done in clubs in Leeds over the years, and you think, well, I must have played in front of, you know, just thousands and thousands and thousands of people in 20 years in clubs in Leeds over the years. So you know, if I put a tour show on there, I should be able to sell it out. And you know, you do a tour show in Leeds without, and I'm just like, you know, 30 people turned up or something. But then you start getting the building the profile up of the telly, and it's the difference is staggering, really. So it's very nice to be able to enjoy that at the minute.
Good, I'm glad. And so the tour, which has been. Has it been delayed a couple of times? This has been going on for bloody donkeys,
so this is one of the ones where you know, I say at the beginning of the show that, like, because this is the second leg now that we've just started, and these tickets went on sale this year, which is like just so refreshing, because we did shows in April, May, and June, which went on sale in 2020. And I say in the show that those shows, there were people that had tickets for over 2.5 years. About 2.5 years by the time they got to see me. I say I had tickets to see Guns N' Roses at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in July, and I had them for the same length of time that some people had tickets to see me at Swindon Arts Centre. And how'd you live up to them kind of expectations? So it was kind of rearranged. But the thing is it was only meant to be. This is kind of worked out in my favour, really, because at the start of the lockdown, I had done live at the Apollo. I'd done two live at the Apollos, maybe, and I think just those three. So if I got news for you, would I lie to you? And what was the other one I said? Cats Countdown. Cats. I think that's all I'd done. And so the tour was going to be like 20 dates, kind of dip your toe in, see whether the telly's made any difference. And then by this point now, I would have been doing a completely different tour show. But because they were put off, and then I had more and more telly over the lockdowns. But every time they got rearranged, we added more. So those 20 dates now like ended up being like 140 odd.
Wow.
But it's still that show that I never got to do in 2020, yeah. Which I kind of, you know, took apart and rewrote. But the gist of it's the same.
Yeah.
But I was still writing over the lockdown, so I feel like I've got a spare show in my pocket.
But it's interesting because it could have been, I think about that a lot, especially like in terms of the Edinburgh Fringe. But for any, if you're just about to break in 2020, which I had in my 2020 when the year started, I've got Taskmaster coming up, I've got this, Michael Palin's going to be on Rahelastapa, I've got loads of great things coming up. And then, you know, and then the year got taken out. But you were just at that point where. This it could have been make or break, couldn't it? And luckily, it's the impetus has stayed there. But it's sort of crazy to think that you just your star was on the rise, and then suddenly something completely unexpected comes.
Yeah, I mean, I think I just got in with the panel shows just in time to prove me worth before we went into doing the lockdown versions. And I mean, the second episode of Have I Got News for You that I did in my living room. Wearing a lovely iron shirt and a pair of tracksuit bottoms and no shoes. Because all they could see was the waist up sat in my living room. And QI was, I did it in front of 30 people in a studio, and then in front of nobody. I remember doing one of those in front of nobody in the studio, and they had a Zoom audience, but we couldn't hear the Zoom audience. So we had no idea what anyone found funny. But you just... So what you do is you just try and make each other laugh. So, you know, I was with Jimmy Carr and that, and you just do it as like... this is like a fancy podcast. Let's just make each other laugh. But then when it's on the telly and they put the Zoom audience on and everyone can hear the normal audience laughing, they're like, God, they laugh at their own jokes a bit too much. Because that's all we had. It's all we had in the studio.
Yeah.
But it's such a joy to have the audiences back for the studio stuff.
Brilliant. Yeah, and I should say the tour is called Speaky Blinder.
Yeah. I hate it, mate. I absolutely hate it. I hate it with every fibre of my being. Obviously, Peaky Blinders, take the S off the end, put it on the beginning, right? Oh, I can't even explain how much I hate it. First of all, I didn't want anything that was like on the nose like that. And I hate puns. I hate plays on things like that. And lovely Justin Morehouse. You had Justin Morehouse
on? I do, yeah, yeah.
Have you had him on here?
I haven't had him on here, unbelievably.
Right. He's one of me, just one of my favourite comedians. He's just, I mean, he's been going to donkeys as well. And he's just astonishingly consistent. And he phoned me up. And he goes, I've got a name for your show. I said, what is it? He goes, you're not going to like it. And he told me, and I went, oh, yeah, that's quite amusing, mate, but nice one anyway. Made the mistake of telling me agent and the tour promoter. And they went, that's fucking brilliant. That's amazing. That'll sell tickets. I said, no, but we can't have it. It's shit. He go, well, you think of something better and you can have that. And I was coming up with all these different names and they were going, no, 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 no. And in the end, I thought, well, do you know what? It's only going to be 20 dates. So it's like, you know, when you're a parent, like, and you, sometimes there's like there's like wars that aren't worth it. You go, well, I'll just take this defeat now, knowing that they owe me a victory in the future. 20 dates, let's just call it that, and then we'll all move on. Bloody 3 years later, 140 odd dates, other side of a pandemic, and I'm I'm stuck with the name that I hate.
Well, I think, you know, but it's good to have a name. If people laugh at the title of the show, then that's
well, three people did, mate.
Yeah, it wasn't. I've got a very sophisticated audience.
There was a girl down here, and there was like two people over there.
My audience like joked about 18th century novelists. We don't do the kind of cheap stuff here. We wouldn't do cock jokes, for example. It's a terrific thing. I was also noticed. I thought you'd be great having a podcast, and you did have a podcast, and you stopped doing it just before the pandemic. So is that right?
You wouldn't know this to like watch me on anything, but I have such crippling perfectionism, and I find it really hard to put anything out that I have created myself. I don't have it with stand-up. Stand-up's a lot... you need to make your mistakes on stage with stand-up.
Yeah.
But in terms of putting something out online, it makes me feel sick in my stomach. And so I did this kind of podcast that was... It was kind of just an amalgamation of me talking about stuff that had happened at home and recording stuff when I was out at gigs, putting little clips of shit that happened with, like, with people in the crowd or, you know, backstage or in the car or whatever. And I became so obsessed with editing it and trimming out little bits and making it so just like I had to listen to it on headphones and go, oh God, I think you heard a bit of my a bit of like mouth noise on that. I'll get rid of that 0.08 milliseconds. And if you can imagine how long it must take a blind fella to fucking edit something on a computer, it took me so long. But I find it very hard. This is why I hate social media. I post something on social media, even if it's just a post, just like a thing, just like a funny little thing in my head that I think is funny. And then for the next 2 hours, I'm thinking, oh God, did I word it right? I'll go back and look at it and go, oh God, I should have worded it the other way. There's redundant words in that, or I find it all quite crippling. So I stopped doing it.
Right, and it's not there. I couldn't find it, or is it still up there somewhere?
I have no idea because I did this thing where you click a button and it puts it on different things, but there was no button to take it off the different things. So I don't. Maybe it is somewhere, but yeah, it was. No one fucking listened to it, mate. To be honest,
hasn't stopped me. hasn't stopped me, and certainly you're not going to get anything edited out of this. So you know, that was the mistake you made. Don't edit a thing. I feel like someone just has gone backstage. I thought I've heard loads of noises. Is it because you're blind that my hearing's become a lot better? There's someone backstage walking around. There was like a did someone hear a tube train go over the.
So like if you
didn't hear that tube train,
if you can't picture this in your head, yeah. When you hear the sounds, do you just think raw facts? I don't know, just information. Is it just like the Matrix ones and zeros?
It must be something like that. But it's been a lot of weird noises today. I think there's a church up above here. But what were they doing in the church? It sounds like a tube train. They were dragons. Do you think they've killed someone in the church?
I don't know, mate, but there must be like a no WD-40 rule in churches, mustn't there?
There is. was the Raw Variety, was that one of the socially distanced ones, or was that...
No, that was a real one. Do you know what? It was amazing as well, good. Because I was terrified. I went to, it was in the Royal Albert Hall. First of all, it was wonderful. Everybody did well. Every single person on it did amazing. Partly because, everyone had a good gig, but also it was the Royal Albert Hall. And I think you hear horror stories about comedians dying on their arse at the Variety. And often it's in a smaller venue. The Palladium's had a lot of them. And I think that's like 2,000 people, but it's 5.5 or something at the Royal Albert Hall. Yeah. So I think what you find is that you get a lot more normal people there. Yeah. The demographic becomes just on average more normal. Plus everyone was just so glad to be out on the back of the pandemic. And Alan Carr was hosting. He did an amazing job. So the whole thing was joyous. But I was sat there the day before. You have to go in for a sound check. And I was sat there in an empty Royal Albert Hall watching Keala Settle do that song from The Greatest Showman. And she had this choir behind her. She had drummers around the room. And like, I've watched The Greatest Showman about 20 times with my daughter, but I'm not usually a musical fan, like in terms of musical theatre. It's never really done it for me, but like I've seen the film a lot and I know that song inside out really. But watching it, it was one of the, like I'm a rock and I'm a metal fan.
Yeah.
It was one of the most powerful things I have ever seen performed in front of me. I was like, I was sat there trying not to cry at it. I had this lump in my throat. It was so overwhelmingly emotional. And all I was thinking was, what the fuck am I doing here? Why am I on the same stage as this? This is astonishing. And then the next day, you're there. And you wait, and me and poor Josh were pacing like we're on death row. Josh Widdicombe. And at one point he goes, "Oh, Chris, I feel like we've been in a car crash together and we bonded." That was like Zippy, that wasn't it? Jesus. and honestly, the two of us were so nervous because he was. Well, they show it on the telly in a different order to what it goes on in the room. But he was following Matilda the Musical. that's just ridiculous in itself, isn't it? You've got like amazing kids doing bloody scooters on stage whilst singing and dancing. And it's just incredible. And then like he's got to follow that. I followed these German fellas that did this circus act. And there was like four of them or something. And they do this thing where like one of them lifts one of them up and he balances on his head. And then he lifts the other fella up. And then there's like this fella with three big German fellas on his head. I say German fellas like that affects the balance. I should have just mentioned they were from Germany at the beginning. But I say it like, do you know what? You'd think that was odd, but they were German. and you know what Germans are like for balance. Whoa! Really odd centre of gravity.
Back, they, to keep the balance. Put their hand up.
But they were doing this thing, what? And I was stood in the side waiting to go on, and all I could hear was music and 5,500 people screaming and losing their shit at basically possibly the most visual thing on the show, apart from Cirque du Soleil. And I didn't know what they were doing at the time. I could just hear them going mental. And then when you thought they couldn't go any more mental, there'd be a little lull and then it'd just kick up. And I was like, oh my, how do I walk out after this and just go, hello? But luckily, they showed like a horrific Variety video about whatever they were raising money for, about Alzheimer's or something. So I was like, really, oh, thanks, fantastic. I've only got to follow the Alzheimer's video. With 2,000 entertainers every year develop Alzheimer's. Get in!
which royals were there? Was Did you meet any of the...
So, yeah, it was William and Kate.
Still alive.
And yeah, it was William and Kate. You meet them afterwards. Josh is hilarious. Like, he's funny. He's funny as a comedian, but he's also very funny as a neurotic bloke. And I've stood next to him. We're in the lineup waiting to meet William and Kate. And Josh is now reliving the whole, like, the sliding doors moment, mate. Right. But he's waiting for them to come out, like, living the fact that, oh, my God, imagine if we died on our arse. How awful would this be now? Oh, you wouldn't be able to make eye contact, which, mate, you did really well. But imagine if I didn't. So he's having a panic attack about what could have happened if he'd have done shit. But you get told all of the do's and don'ts, and you're not allowed to don't you touch them, like don't grab hold of them, don't go to shake hands unless they go to shake hands with you, don't like grab them for a selfie. You're like all just like all of these rules, these do's, and you're like, okay, we're prim and proper. And so you stood there waiting, and then William comes up, and like honestly, he walks up and he just slaps his hand into mine. He goes, "Hey there, Chris, it's the Duke." And like, part of me was like, oh, okay, he's really quite quite chilled out and down to earth. And then the other part of me was like, did he just call himself the Duke? Yeah. Like it was his nickname. Hey, man, I'm the Duke. But he was really, really very down to earth, very relatable. I know he's good at that kind of stuff. It's his job, isn't it? Yeah. But it was honestly like I'm not really a royalist or anything like that. But I like being proven wrong with things. And it was like you're chatting to like a cousin at a wedding that you hadn't seen in 10 years. He was very, very lovely fella.
That's nice.
Yeah. So that was that. I did the Jubilee thing as well. Did you know that?
No.
So in really funny actually, because The Jubilee thing, when they did the buses going around London with people on the buses representing different decades and things. And the week before, I was on Have I Got News For You, and Ian Islip started taking the piss out of it. Oh, apparently there's buses and there's going to be like celebrities on the buses. And I just thought, get your fucker dead down. I just kind of looked down at my feet and I didn't mention I was doing it or anything. I just stayed quiet on that. But we went round on these buses, like waving at people. And I was with Brian Connolly, and I'd never met him before. Brian Connolly, and honestly, he made me laugh so much. He basically stopped me waving at trees and stuff. He told me which side of the bus to wave. Chris, you can stop that side now. You can stop that side. But we ended up at Buckingham Palace, right? And I'm stood there at Buckingham Palace next to Brian Connolly. First of all, he introduces me to Harry Redknapp. That's a good day in anyone's book, isn't it, already, right? But then we stood there and Ed Sheeran comes out to play his song. And Brian's here next to me, got my arm around him, he's got his arm around me, we've had a bonding experience, and he's going, Chris, I mean, he's just there, he's right in front of us. I could walk down there now and get my cock out, and a billion people would see my cock. A billion people, imagine a billion people seeing your cock, Chris. And so I don't know if the cameras ever show me at that point, but I'm crying with laughter while Ed Sheeran is singing quite a delicate, like, touching song. And I'm just laughing about Brian Connolly's cock.
That's the title of the show. Okay. That's the title of the show.
What's the title? Brian Connolly's cock, or laughing about Brian Connolly's cock?
Just Brian Connolly's cock, I think. That's good. Look, we're going to have to go in a second, but I should mention, have you done this, the travelogue yet? The Wonders of the World I Can't See?
That's a working title. Again, yes. It's pretty on the fucking nose, isn't it, mate? I've told them I don't like the title, and right. we're gonna look at that once we've made, see what we've made. But yeah, we filmed it.
Call it Peaky Blinders. Peaky Blinders.
we filmed it over the summer.
All right,
so
cool.
We went to Jordan, we went to Greece, Rome, and Canada. because we figured there's not enough travel shows on the telly. And the point of it is that genuinely I'm not a, I'm not really a traveller in that, like, I don't enjoy a lot of it. And I don't see the point in going to places that are known for the one big thing that the people go to look at. What's the point? You know, if somebody's going to tell me what the pyramids look like, they might as well sit on my couch and describe a photo. So the idea was is that each episode would be me and another comedian, and they would take me to these places and prove to me that there's more going on at these places than just looking at the thing that everyone goes to look at. And it was really, really, really fun. So, but we did Jordan with Guz Khan, Rome with Tom Allen. I was just, I mean, you think Tom Allen is funny, which he is, but like, there's nothing funnier than watching him trying to maintain his sartorial elegance in literally 40 degree Rome heat. And he's got a bloody blazer on and he's got knee high socks. And I, honestly, it was, I was like, mate, just tone it down for just like people will understand, Tom. did Grease with Harry Hill, which was terrific. Just phenomenal. Cause he was such a joy. It was, people, you know, it's a real treat to spend time with Harry being himself. And because obviously he's got a very, very particular stage persona in terms of his comedy, his stand-up, do you know what I mean? And, yeah. And his surrealism. But when he's just himself, he's so funny and he's so engaging and he's just such a joy to spend time with. And then did Canada. We went to Niagara Falls with Lisa Tarbuck.
Oh, terrific.
And you know, New Brighton would have been fun with Lisa Tarbuck. We did all of that stuff, but that's going to be on Channel 4 in January or February or something.
Brilliant, man. It's really terrific. I'm so glad that all this is happening for you. And you've absolutely, you know, there's many comedians who deserve it, but you absolutely do absolutely deserve to have all this success.
It's just a shame that all of that stuff, mate. And this is really the last true thing I've wanted to do, mate. It's taken you 10 years. I've been trying to get on this podcast for 10 years. It's taken four what I like to use, mate, for you to even look at me.
You've got to, it's a big...
I've been abducted by aliens. That's what we talked about. This was backstage, wasn't it, mate? It was backstage. I'm doing callbacks to jokes you didn't even see.
Well, you know, I've been emailing you a lot. You probably didn't see the emails, did you? So it's no, it's really terrific to have you on. I mean, the thing is, there's so many people from the circuit that I really want to have on, and it's kind of difficult to balance everything. So eventually, I'll get round to everyone. And like you mentioning Justin, you know, I can't believe Justin hasn't been on as well. So there you go. It's very difficult to get everybody on, but we've got you on. And thank you very much for doing it. I'm very much looking forward to that show. That sounds fantastic. Do go and see Speaky Blinders, which seems to be going on for another 1,000
May
days.
To May. Finishing in the Shepherd's Bush Empire.
Oh, fantastic. And that's your 20 years in show business.
It will be marking it. I've seen so many concerts there, mate. So yeah. I just can't believe it. Like, I mean, I hope people turn up, otherwise it's going to be awkward, isn't it? But... But yeah, like I've seen Smashing Pumpkins there, so that's just mental to be playing somewhere that I've seen Smashing Pumpkins. So yeah, brilliant. Ends in May.
All right, fantastic. Go and see him; he's a fantastic comedian. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Chris McCausland. Thank you very much.
Cheers, guys. Thank you. Thanks for sticking around.
You have been listening to Rahala Stepper with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Chris McCausland. This is Scant Regard. They're playing some music for me right about now. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm also slightly indebted to my friend and colleague, Chris Evans, not that one, and all of his crazy team of Welsh misfits and little fictional characters that work for him. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for looking after me so nicely. Do come down and see us here one day. We're here most Mondays. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Head to richardherring.com/gigs to find out when Rahulastapa is on live next and if you can get there and who will be on it. It's very exciting. See you in a bit. Bye.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to RichHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.